Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and once again, a very good Thursday program for you. By the way, next Thursday, just 1 week from today, we will be on the floor of the National Catholic Answers Apologetics Conference that we do every year. This is now the eighth year. So I hope you'll tune in. We'll have a lot of fun. We'll get to talk with the folks in the room. We'll do an open forum next Thursday from the room, and we'd just like you to be there. So we'll look forward to doing that. And we'll do the show there Friday as well. Today, we've got a second hour of open forum with Jimmy Akin. So if you have general questions, hang on with those general questions to the second hour, because the first hour, we welcome a very special guest, Dr. Deborah Savage, who's teaching theology right now. She's a visiting professor of theology at the Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio. She's also taught for a long time at St. Paul Seminary School of Divinity at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. Dr. Savage, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You have several key areas of your theological investigation, among them the relations between men and women, the meaning of manhood and womanhood.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you work on.
Yeah, I've been working on that for about 12 years, actually. And I mean, there's much I could say, but maybe just mention that I started with Genesis.
There's a place to start, you know, in the beginning.
Yeah, and discovered some new meaning in the text, I uncovered some new meanings in the text by going back to the original Hebrew. And so I have a lot of things to say about that, but I guess what I'd say as a way of opening is that with that as a starting place, and then of course John Paul II's own account in the theology of the body, I'm sort of building on his project.
Yes.
by trying to articulate a robust account that is philosophically and theologically grounded, scientifically coherent, an account of the nature of man and woman.
If you'd like to call 888-318-7884, our question will be quite specific for Dr. Savage today. Is it still relevant what the Catholic Church has to say about men and women, particularly in the realm of our sexual relations? The allegation would be, we're kind of old-fashioned, us Catholics, that we're out of date, that we're not up with the times. We don't even belong in Kansas City because everything's up to date in Kansas City. So if you have questions about the relevance, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you accept what the Church teaches about sexuality or have rejected it utterly or somewhere in between, if you have questions about the relevance of Catholic sexual ethics, you're welcome to call this hour, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. So I'll just start by putting the question to you, Dr. Savage, that why would anybody, given all that has happened in the modern world, still accept what the Catholic Church has to say about human sexuality?
Well, I think what people don't seem to realize at all is that the Church's truth claims about that sort of thing is grounded in reality itself. It's not something made up out of whole cloth by seeing what Jesus said, for example, even though Jesus's words on these topics is obviously a starting place or it's important and sheds a lot of light on it. Maybe it'd be helpful to point out that the Church is obviously grounded in both faith and reason. This is something the Church, Catholic Church, is quite well known for, that we operate in both realms, if you will. And reason is a kind of approach to truth that calls you to start with what's most immediately apparent.
I see. Yeah, right.
So what's the most immediately apparent about men and women would be the starting place for that. That's kind of like philosophical method. And then at that, you know, at some point one asks, well, what does God say about it?
Okay.
And what you discover is that what is immediately apparent has a place in Scripture. I mean, the Genesis accounts describe much about human sexuality or the relationship between men and women in ways that are quite consistent with science and human experience and what we've been able to derive from just operating at the level of reason. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Men and women obviously have different plumbing, and that plumbing is what makes it possible for the human species to continue, right?
Yes.
So the complementarity of the male and female body is a feature in the building up of civilizations, in the continuation of the human species, in the arrival at true human happiness. So much is driven by the fact that men and women are complementary to one another. And then when you consider that, just without ever referring to scripture at all, you can just see that throughout history, that that's the case. Then when you turn to scripture, you find, well, that's the way God designed it. Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So
yeah.
I don't know if I'm really hitting the mark of what you wanted me to begin with, but
well, the sense I get then is we can fairly and reasonably as Catholics make the claim that we have a coherent ethic. And is it fair then for us to point out to the world that the sexual ethic that we get from, say, Hollywood, from the culture in general, is actually not coherent? And maybe we should point out some of that incoherency just to invite people to reconsider, is the modern sexual ethic really as reasonable as you would seem to suggest?
Yeah, well, I think the proof is in the pudding. Let's ask ourselves, are we really happy as a culture?
Right.
Has the sexual revolution itself made good on all its promises? And the truth is it hasn't. The family is falling apart. Even if you don't think marriage is a necessary institution, it's still undeniable that it's married people are generally happier than unmarried people.
Right.
They live longer. They have more fruitful lives. When they get older, they have someone to care for them. There's a whole network that's created out of families that serves as a support system, if you will, for every human being contained within that family. It's a naturally occurring institution.
Yes.
No one imposed that on humanity. Here's what you must do. It's just the way humanity evolved. A recognition that one needs to be a member of a community, and that first community is the family. And so the way Hollywood and the rest of the culture is treating human sexuality completely denies the actual reality right there in front of our face, that happiness is possible when one exists in a natural state. And, you know, the natural state is to recognize myself as part of a family. I want to say that this might be relevant to the audience, that I grew up in California, and I went to college in 1970, about an hour away from Haight-Ashbury, which, in case some of your younger audience members won't know much about, but that was sort of ground zero of the sexual revolution. And I saw it happen. And I can tell you this, that there was nothing freeing about that.
That is the big lie about all of it, isn't it? That this is a liberation movement. That the sexual revolution itself is a liberation movement.
Yes, no, that's true. It's a big illusion that free sex with whoever you want to have it with, is the route to happiness. It's really not. And that sort of thing has never been the route to happiness. The immediate gratification that one gets from a sensual pleasure will never satisfy my desire for true happiness. The minute I consume it, I want more. There's no end to that appetite. And so our true happiness is going to be found somewhere else. And the sexual revolution has distracted us from that pursuit. So we're now intent on creating happy lives by pursuing things that will never satisfy the burden of human happiness. Fame, fortune, sexual partners, you know, food, drink, travel, all those things they're good in themselves, but they aren't great enough. They're not noble enough. They're not magnificent enough to satisfy the longings of the human heart. And this has become evident in the way our culture is disintegrating before our eyes. You know, those young men that go out and commit mass murder, or even just the average day in Chicago, you know, or a murder on the street. Why is that happening? Why is it mostly young men? Because they don't have fathers in the home. 40% of the children in this country live without a father in the home. The great majority of men in prison come from fatherless homes. There's lots of reasons for that. It's actually difficult to learn to become a man. His vocation isn't built into his very body like a woman's is. And so he has to search for it, and he needs guidance in order to find it successfully, to learn who he is and what he should become. And without a father, they're lost. There's no one to tell them no. They think they created themselves, etc. So it's just foolish for the culture to pretend that it can abuse the sexual act in the way that it has and get off scot-free. I'll just make one more comment.
Sure.
John Paul II says that it's not that we take sex too seriously, like we're obsessed with it. He says we don't take it seriously enough. We don't respect it for the meaning that it actually has. And I say, as John Paul does, that the sexual act is man's participation in the transmission of existence.
Which, that's a pretty high vocation.
Which is God's thing.
Yeah, right.
Okay, God's in charge of existence. So to participate in the transmission of existence is a very important thing. It's got cosmic importance. And it's the moment at which heaven and earth are connected in every way, both physically and spiritually. So when you mess with that kind of thing, where think of it as an electrical current connecting heaven and earth, you try to grab it without the right formation or misuse it in any way without the proper intention or understanding, you create a short. You end up in a short, like a electrical wire flapping around on the street that you're trying to grab. And I say that it's so central to who we are as human persons that because we don't understand that, that's why things are falling apart, because we didn't understand the centrality of the sexual act in a profound and meaningful way. We've skipped over that.
888-318-7884 is the number. Maybe you think we're insane. Some people do think that if anyone in the modern world embraces this ancient Catholic sexual ethic, and I must say, even to the ancient world, many of the things that we have undertaken today would make no sense. So even what was common sense in the ancient world, for example, the difference between men and women, the ancient world was quite clear what marriage was, that it needed both a man and a woman. So we are innovators in that as well, not just the Catholic sexual ethic, but even common sense about sexual ethics. Like maybe you shouldn't try to change, not maybe you shouldn't, you shouldn't try to change the nature of a boy or a girl, that to do so is cruelty and abusive. If you think we're insane on all that, give us a call, 888-318-7884, or maybe you just like some help explaining it to the kids, getting some understanding in your own marriage. Is the Catholic sexual ethic still relevant? Dr. Deborah Savage is our guest. Your calls are welcome. 888-318-7884.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi, I'm Johnette Williams, and I want to invite you to join me at the EWTN Family Celebration in Phoenix. I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Make your plans now to attend the EWTN Family Celebration October 1st at the Phoenix Convention Center in Phoenix, Arizona. Find out how you can be a part at EWTN.com/Family Celebration.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. The most divisive show music in Catholic radio, but Dr. Deborah Savage dancing to it at the break.
I thought it was good.
There we go. It is settled, Internet. Stop complaining about the music. 888-318-7884 is the number here. If you have questions about sexuality from a Catholic perspective, if it's something that you just can't get your mind around, why would anybody accept that? Maybe there's a particular aspect of Catholic sexual teaching, whether it's contraception or gay marriage or something else that you think no longer true or no longer salient, you are very welcome to call 888-318-7884. Before I go to the questions, though, I do have one more question that I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
It seems to me that we had this sexual revolution and everybody lost. There may be a few winners, but even those are temporary victories for them. And so nobody can reasonably look at it and go, well, that was a great success. I'm glad we did that.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that the entire entertainment industry has been directed for some reason, is self-directing itself to cover up the fact that sexual revolution was a complete failure. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed this fact? Like, it just seems like TV won't admit that it's a failure. Christians are portrayed as backwards and nuts,
right.
And anybody who maintains an idea that, I don't know, say chastity would be a value is a wacko in the media.
Yeah. Yeah, it's become the default position that you sleep with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's even funny how we put it, sleep with someone?
Yeah.
That's not sleeping, actually,
no.
as I've experienced it in my marriage anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's being a little glib, I suppose. But, I think the steps that have been taken, how we got here it's sort of, you can refer to that as the law of moral decline. It kind of follows the law of moral entropy, or the law of entropy itself, that if you don't, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. And when we let go of that rope, the descent has been
right.
Steady and gradual. And but inevitable, because we haven't pushed back, because the culture decided it knew better than the tradition that we lived with for so long. I think that's what has happened is that the body, in a way, is sort of taken over. The body's making demands. It wants that because it's a kind of, I refer to it as a culturally transmitted disease, this assumption that I'll find my happiness if I can have sex with whoever I want. I don't know where to go with it. There's so many things one could say. The data reveals that women are less happy than they've ever been since we began to study it, right? And the woman has a different relationship to the sexual act than a man does, because in the sexual act, the woman actually is penetrated. She's entered, right? And that if it's not recognized that when that takes place, she gives something of herself in a way that the man simply doesn't, right? And it in particular has destroyed women's self-esteem, their understanding of themselves, their
right.
They think they've been treated as objects for so long, and it was supposed to stop that, but it's only made it worse, right? That they now begun to think of themselves as objects too. They just assume that's how they.
And then
what they are.
It does seem that that's gone on for two, three, four generations now. So that the young person that you might invite into a healthy sexual life. That doesn't even fit anywhere. They have no example of
right,
that. They have
right.
zero. So it just is, it's as if you're talking Martian to
yeah.
them.
Yeah. And so I would say, I want to throw this out, that when women stop saying no to the sexual demands of sex, for sex, that was the beginning of the end. That was the beginning of the descent into the chaos we have now. And why do I say that? Because there isn't a recognition that chastity is actually a rite of initiation into adulthood.
I see. Right. So no one ever becomes an adult.
No, no one ever becomes
an adult. You have no rite of passage.
No, that's right. And so the young man never has to face the fact that his desires are disordered. You know, if he just wants sex with whoever he can get it from, that's a disordered desire, because human the sexual act is not the goal of human existence. It's a means of showing your love for someone, etc. Right? There's all sorts of other meanings associated with it, and so as a consequence, he never actually grows up. He never has to face can't have just what he wants all the time.
Yep.
Without working for it, we've permitted men to pretend to themselves that they can get what they want without working for it. Prior to that, the woman said, "No, if you want that, I save that for marriage. And by the way, if you want to get married ever, you'd better have a job. You better make something of yourself."
That's something, yeah.
So that was the beginning of process whereby so many men are actually juveniles.
Yeah.
And so now what we have walking around is a generation after generation of juvenile males and wounded women.
Women, yeah. Right. It's like the whole world has become a Seth Rogen movie, and it's a tragedy.
Okay.
I
don't know Seth Rogen.
A man-child. I mean, the glorification of the man-child
stops. Well, you know what else has happened, of course, is if you watch television and see the commercials, men are made fun of all the time.
This question comes from Elizabeth on YouTube, and she says, "I found out a Catholic family member has an IUD. She said a priest told her it's okay to use it to maintain her mental health. What can I do to guide her?"
Well, the priest is wrong, at least according to church teaching. An IUD is actually an abortifacient. And so if you're making use of that device, you can be sure that a child has been conceived and the IUD device aborted it. So you have to think about it that way. It's not just a convenient mechanism for ensuring one doesn't get pregnant, and it's not 100% preventative, etc. But this is the source of the problem, actually, this kind of approach to sexuality, because what that really does, the use of an IUD or any contraception at all, turns the woman into an object. She is now not a woman anymore in a certain way, because she has prevented something that is essential to her nature from working properly. And so I recognize that there may be mental health issues involved, but that young woman needs to understand that the best route to mental health is to not sleep with people with whom she doesn't plan to have children, to not give in to those demands, because that isn't the route to happiness. So, I guess I'd have to know a little bit more about the mental health aspect of that question before saying much, much more, because I don't want to pretend that that might not be an issue. But I don't see the connection between the use of an IUD and mental health, really.
Elizabeth, thank you very, very much for that question. I'm going to go to callers. 888-318-7884 is the number. Dr. Deborah Savage, teaching theology at Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio now, and specializing in questions about the intersection, I suppose, of the human body and theology. I mean, you do work on work.
Yeah.
You do work on human sexuality.
Yeah. And man and woman.
Yeah, a lot of
my specialty is actually the nature of man and woman. And of course, that has implications for sexuality.
I should mention to folks, too, and Trevor in Omaha, you're next. I'm going to come right to you. But you were kind enough to record an episode of our podcast with us. And so that'll be coming out in a week or two on Catholic Answers Focus. And in that recording that you did with us, you get into your theology a bit, rooted in a kind of a an enlightened reading of the first chapters of the book of Genesis in order to help us understand the nature of manhood and womanhood.
Yeah. Did you want me to say a few words about that now?
I did, but I'm realizing I didn't leave you any time to do that. So that's not very fair. So if you want to say something when we come back, you can do that, or we'll take calls. But mostly I wanted to encourage people, listen, because the misrepresentation of what God has revealed to us in the early chapters of Genesis, particularly about men and women, can be overcome with an enlightened and helpful theology teacher. And I really hope you'll join us on Catholic Answers Focus for that. Right now, we'll take a quick break and be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Tomorrow on More to Life, make it work.
Feeling stuck in your life or relationships will help you find some answers.
That's tomorrow on More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Wait a minute. Dr. Savage was dancing to the regular music, and now you play her the groovy music. This is just confusing. You're confusing our guests now. A little bit of groovy music there for Thursday. You know we play the groovy music on Thursday. We'll probably play it again when Jimmy's here, second hour. Second hour is open forum. If you've got an open forum type question, just hang on. We'll get to you the second hour. Folks on the line now with questions about sexuality. From the Catholic perspective, if you have those questions, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're Christian or not, if you're not a Christian person and you'd like to know why does the Catholic Church teach what it teaches about the various aspects of human sexuality, from pornography to marriage to everything in between. See, I started with a bad and I went to a good there. I went, that was my trajectory on that one. Trevor in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. He's probably out of range of a Spirit Catholic radio tower. Otherwise, why would you listen on our app in Nebraska? Trevor, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Dr. Deborah Savage.
Hi. I don't listen to Spirit Catholic radio because my car radio does not work.
I'm sorry about that. I have that same car. We have the same model. Yeah.
Jeez. Well, my question was that a lot of times when you quote the Bible and say male and female, who created them, somebody who believes that you can change genders would say that, well, that's not actually, saying that gender is binary, because it also says he created day and night, and there's, kind of like a sunset, sunrise,
twilight
deal where it's not exactly day or night.
Yeah.
So how would you respond to that argument?
I'm not sure I'd give it much time, but you know, that's not fair, Trevor. Okay, Deborah, make your mind work here. It makes no sense to me. The argument makes no sense to me, actually, because the order of creation that God clearly, the order in which he clearly creates, suggests a hierarchy. And then at the let me add this in, I guess. Here, this might help. At the point at which he creates man and woman, John Paul II talks about this in the Theology of the Body, he pauses. He pauses at that point. And John Paul says he seems to sort of go back into himself, and it's after that that he creates man and woman. So there's a distinct moment in the creation of the world and of man and woman at which there's a kind of break. So I don't think that it's appropriate. I don't think that it's logical. I don't think that there's any evidence. I would say the evidence supports recognizing that the creation of man and woman is an entirely new step in that process. I don't think you can equate the creation of man and woman with the way in which the creation of the natural order unfolds. What do you think about that? Are you still there, Trevor?
I mean, like, it makes sense to me. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to make a non-Christian understand that.
Yeah.
Or I guess, not a Catholic either.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I would say start with that's not the right way to interpret the Genesis creation accounts by any means, because if you look at the passage, I'd have to have the Bible in front of me to read it to you, but it's very clear that the moment at which man and woman are created, or male and female are created in Genesis 1:26 or so, there's the beginning of something new. So it might be true that there seems to be a continuum at work in the creation of the natural order, but I don't think you can use that as a reference point for the moment at which man and woman are created. If the person is trying to argue from Genesis, then your argument, it seems to me, would have to come from a look at Genesis itself, right? And there's evidence in Genesis that moment of in time, in the order in which God creates, is actually a distinct moment.
Of something really special.
Of something really special.
It seems just so odd to me that a book that says male and female, he created them, why are we looking for a different interpretation of that? That seems fairly straightforward.
No, that's right. Yeah. Like,
That seems like we're trying to make the text do a lot of work that it's clearly saying it's not going to do.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, he didn't say anything that made that claim less clear.
Yeah.
He didn't indicate that there's any reason to think that he wasn't doing what it says he did. So I think, you know, I'm sorry to not be able to help more in a way, because I know, Trevor, that what you're trying to do is very difficult. But I don't think that argument doesn't work.
Trevor, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very, very much for the call. Lots of folks on the line now with questions for our guest, Dr. Deborah Savage. Okay. From Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio. Joseph, right here in California, watching on YouTube. Joseph, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Savage.
Hi, Dr. Savage.
Hi.
My question is, I was recently watching the debate with Christopher Hitchens and Stephen Fry versus the Catholic Church on, is the Catholic Church a force for good? And in there, Stephen Fry makes the point that the incredible sexual dysfunction of a first century religion trying to teach its sexual ethics in a 21st century world, he makes the analogy of people being obsessed with food, such as the anorexics and the morbidly obese, are the ones that have issues with living with food issues. And he claims that that's the Catholic church's position on sexuality in a nutshell, that they're the ones that are obsessed with it and they are the ones that are dysfunctional in it, because everybody else that lives a healthy 21st century lifestyle of sexuality can live with it perfectly fine.
Does that,
without
is that,
the first century.
That's an interesting point. Is that your issue. Impression given, I mean, we had this whole discussion at the beginning about the actual condition of the world today, the way children are being treated, the way women are being treated. Would you agree with Fry that this seems like a liberation from first century ethics? Oh, well, I guess Joseph's not there.
Are you asking me?
Yes, I was asking
Dr.
you.
Savage?
No. You proposed the question to Dr. Savage that Stephen Fry says we're backwards. But I'm wondering if you caught the first part of our conversation, it doesn't seem like Stephen Fry has any point at all. Things are not getting better as far as sex goes. They're getting worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not just only sex itself, but just the state of human happiness in the world right now, I'd say, is at a low point. And I think you can trace a good deal of that back to the beginning of the sexual revolution, in that we've underestimated the importance that are not the sexual act so much, that's part of it, but the fact that we're created in the image of a God who creates, and our sexuality and our capacity for work are both reflections of the fact that we're created in the image of a God who creates. We're creative. And so we've underestimated the importance of the creative impulse that exists in ourselves, that is itself expressed in the sexual act in a very intimate and cosmically important way. As I said, John Paul II says that act is the moment at which we participate in the transmission of existence. And so when you mess with that, as I said, you get a short, and that's what we've got. People are all, rewiring everything to accommodate a disordered desire, since it's the pursuit of sex without limits, of sex without consequences, is a desire that's not going to, let's just say, it's not going to lead to a holistic sense of the person. I am not just my sexual organs. I'm much more than that. What about the rest of me? And so I think that Mr. Fry has it wrong, that the church would say, no, we're not sex obsessed. We're trying to tell you that you are. I think that's a critique of the culture. We're sex crazed in our culture. Everything is about sex. Beer commercials are about sex. NASCAR races are about sex. Shots to the moon are about sex, right? Everything's about sex. So who's sex obsessed? It's not the church. The church is trying to point out to us that we don't take sex seriously enough. And by that, it doesn't mean it's the centerpiece of our lives. By that, it means we have underestimated the importance of that act, the importance of that feature of our being that makes it possible for us to participate in the transmission of existence. That's a big deal. We don't create life, in case you haven't noticed, said, I would say to Mr. Fry. We are not able to create living things. We can replicate them, but we cannot create them. Existence is the domain of God. It's God who holds things in existence. And so because of that, we've messed with the very thing that connects heaven and earth.
I'm going to leave it there because we got to take our final break this hour. I'm very grateful to have Dr. Deborah Savage with us from Franciscan University, doing some talks out here in San Diego, and we're so glad to have her in studio to talk about this, fraught topic at this moment in human history. And by moment, I mean century. And by century, I mean probably forever. We'll be right back with more of your questions for Dr. Savage right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
This is Steve Liegers, president of Tri-State Catholic Radio, and I am a sinner. A sinner who needs God's grace and mercy, especially when I'm weak or disappointed in myself or have hurt others. Catholic Radio and its wonderful variety of programming reminds me that God loves me and uses radio as a medium to broadcast his love and encouragement into our world. Find a Catholic station in your area and tune in.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I do not know if this is a defect or a feature, but Dr. Deborah Savage dances to the theme music and not to the groovy music. So
yeah, that's not dance music.
Nice. Jeez. I like it.
That's elevator music.
We're very glad you're here. Again, thank you very much for being here.
In spite of my critiques of your music.
No. I do not mind the critique at all. I'm just tired of those people on the internet who say, I won't listen anymore because your music is so bad. Really? It's that bad? I don't think so. 888-318-7884, the number, 888-31-TRUTH. We're talking about human sexuality. We're talking about the Catholic perspective. Is the Catholic perspective on human sexuality just out of date? Should we get over it and move on? We don't think so. And Dr. Savage here to give the reasons why we don't think so. Greg in St. Louis, Missouri is next, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Greg, glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Savage.
Well, I got kind of a question and a statement. You know, the nation, any nation is made up, the fabric of the nation is made up of families.
Yes.
And I've been in Christendom for 50 years, the Protestant and then Catholic. And, you know, I have never heard a whole lot of, even if one sermon was even touched on the sin of adultery. The commandment was right there by thou shalt not murder and thou shalt not commit adultery. And these kids have no father in the home for the most part because of adultery.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand why the church has not thundered it from the pulpit for years. You know, thou shalt not commit adultery.
Thanks, Greg. What do you think, Dr. Savage?
Well, I taught at a seminary for 13 years before I took on my position at Franciscan. And so I do have a little something to say about the preaching part anyway. There's lots of reasons for that, but one of them is that the seminarians are taught that what they do is they preach on the gospel of the day. And so you may not hear many sermons on that because the job of the priest is to unpack the meaning of the scripture for the day, and that's not always part of the topic. So I know that's simply a practical consideration that's the general thrust of a homily, at least it's intended to be. But the other reason that's more deadly and maybe gets more at what your real issue is that there's a fear factor, because let's just look back when Humani Vitae came out, the priests did not preach on that, because what they feared was that people would leave the church. There was so much controversy about that document. And from that moment onward, the whole question of human sexuality became so fraught with, it's so loaded, so, you know, so dangerous in a way that I think we need to admit that some priests, even some bishops, sort of hold back from a full-throated defense of the church's teaching. And that, I agree, is really very unfortunate. Now, this isn't the case for everyone. There's plenty of priests. You know some of them. We all know some of them that are very clear about it. But I think the truth might be also that the priests that you've heard or that are in your parish may or may not have a deep understanding of the deep background on the church's teaching anyway, you know, the stuff that we've learned since the theology of the body came out. Just one example, the fundamental basis for the church's teaching on human sexuality has to do with the fact that the human person is a union of body and soul, and the soul is everywhere in the body. And what? So what? That's interesting, Dr. Savage. Well, what does that mean? It means that no matter what I do or where I go, whatever decision I make, it's never only bodies. The culture has turned this into kind of a materialist thing where it's only bodies. Someone said to me once, I don't know what all the fuss is all about in terms of the church's teaching on this. After all, it's only bodies. Well, the point is, though, the church says it's not only bodies, not ever. Because who I am is in every cell of my body. My body's not just an appendage that I can do with whatever I want. And if you don't grasp that, the significance of the fact that the body and soul are one, and that they are, they're the body and the human person is all parts equal, body and soul. If you haven't made explicit to yourself that the body is not just matter, it's hard to get a foothold sometimes in just making the case that, well, why not, since it's pleasurable, or whatever the interlocutor might be saying. So, I would add this, that sex education, wherever it comes up, needs to always be preceded by personhood education, because by teaching kids or even just talking about sex apart from the nature of the person implies that it's merely a biological act. And it isn't. It's a part of the person's entire being. It's how we're composed, right? It's how we're put together for love. It's very clear from the nature of the body. And, so Christian anthropology needs to precede teaching or training about the church's sexual ethic. If you don't have the human person right, you won't ever understand why the church teaches what she does.
Greg, thank you. I hope that was helpful to you. I wonder if that's part of what the priest faces, is he's looking out at a congregation where he knows many are uncatechized completely.
Right.
They really don't know
right.
the basic teachings
yeah.
of the church.
Yeah.
Let me see, who's next? Sandy in Boise, Idaho. Thanks again, Greg, listening on Salt and Light Radio. Sandy, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Dr. Deborah Savage.
I'm going to tweak my question just a bit. So what do you think would need to happen, some kind of cultural rock bottom, so that we can turn things around yeah. and have our young ladies say no uh-huh. to premarital sex?
Yeah. Well, gosh, Sandy, you're really putting me on the spot here.
Just fix the culture.
Well, yeah.
You've got
yeah.
5 minutes in your answer.
Oh, okay.
Fix it.
No problem. I think the thing that will save us, if anything can, is going to be a small, no doubt small in relation to the size of the U.S., let's say, or the world at large, a small but growing group of people who absolutely understand why the church teaches what she does about human sexuality, who understand the dangers of sexual promiscuity, not only the sin, but also the way it destroys the person him or herself. This has been really devastating for both young men and young women, because they've let their sexual desires predominate for so long. They've been instructed to do that they've forgotten about the other things that life includes, and the kind of work it takes to be a full human being. It's not reducible to sexual desire at all. So they're missing out. You look around. People don't want to go to work again anymore. They're women are aborting their own babies. There's sex, drugs, and rock and roll has taken first place in the culture. We're destroying ourselves. So I think my answer would be that it's going to begin in a small community that grows. So let's go back to the earliest Christian communities. We forget that the earliest Christian community entered into a pagan culture, right? All of the things that we are experiencing now, every single thing from promiscuity to abortion to contraception to pedophilia to homosexuality, all of those things were allowed and encouraged, actually, in the pagan world. That's how people lived. It wasn't seen as a problem. Christianity civilized that culture, right? By the 5th century, everything had changed in a way. How did we do that? By banding together, not in private communities. I'm not saying that we retreat. I'm saying we do what the Christians did at that time. We evangelize. But we have to be more clear than I'd say most of us are about why the church teaches what she does. The philosophical reasons for it, not just those that are based in scripture. But many of the things we want to argue are accessible through reason. You don't have to refer to scripture to know that promiscuity will destroy a young woman. It may or may not be as hard on the men, but young women are destroyed by promiscuity because they're giving away a part of themselves every time they engage in the sexual act with a man who has no regard for her. And so it's very difficult to recover from that, which is why all these women are so angry. They don't really understand it. They think the solution is to have more sex, but they're absolutely heading in the wrong direction. So we have no choice but to continue to educate ourselves and band together and work together to try to persuade the culture, the people we encounter, not the culture, your neighborhood, your family, your children, so that we can shift the tide at some point. It doesn't mean everyone has to agree with this. Maybe 30% of the, maybe we need 30% of the population to join us in that fight. And that's what they call a critical mass, right? We don't need everybody. We just need a critical mass of people who are taking the stage away, taking the attention away from these people who are grabbing all the attention, right? Another way to go about it really is through media, actually. Look at the new movies that are coming out that are produced by Catholic and Christian organizations. Many of them are getting pretty good press, right? I've noticed that my students respond really well to video. If I want to teach them something, I find a video that goes to the heart of the issue, perhaps. And they really learn from that. They really pay attention to that. So we need to use the visual arts, actually, more and more. So don't give up, Sandy. Find a group of women or men or both and take time to educate yourselves, find the right texts and resources, and make a plan. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. The only way you're going to get better is if you do something. And so you think about what the right thing is to do, of course, but then band together with others to do it.
Sandy, I feel we're right at the end, as you can hear now, but I'm so grateful that you asked that question and elicited that answer, which I think is extremely helpful if we would meditate on that as an approach. We'll stop trying to think that it's going to be solved by a political party or it's going to be solved by some kind of revolution. These things require the patience of saints and the spirit that's willing to conform to Christ, and I'm so glad that we were able to hear Dr. Savage's answer to that. So thank you, Sandy. I hope you'll call again. Dr. Deborah Savage, I've really enjoyed both opportunities to record with you today. Really, very, very much. Thank you for your wonderful work and for coming here to share it with us.
Yes, I'm so happy you asked me. I'll come again if you want.
We definitely do want. Thank you very, very much. Coming up next hour, it's going to be open forum. So if you've got a question that we didn't get to this hour, that's okay. Bring it up with Jimmy. But you can also ask anything you want right after this on Catholic Answers Live.